call the meeting to order. Welcome everyone, and welcome back Legislator Rock.
Thank you.
Who had a nice vacation, a well-deserved vacation, is now back, ready to deal with law enforcement here.
Ready to aid law enforcement.
So the first thing that we'll do is approve the February 4th, 2019 meeting minutes. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
I have an amendment to the minutes.
Amendment to the minutes.
Just the first page where it says Legislator Chairwoman Mayo called the meeting to order. Just amend that to reflect.
What an outrage. How appalling. Do I have to do the
You'll
whole thing?
You'll just adopt an amendment, yeah. No, she just is pointing out typo.
Okay.
It's okay.
So can we have we have a second? So motion to adopt
as amended.
Second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's very complicated. You guys are throwing me wrenches here. What I'd like to do is take new business first. So we'd have the district attorney and Director Feldman speak about their assessment program first. If there are no objections, we can go ahead and do that. No objections? All right. I'm going to turn the floor over to you, District Attorney.
Thank you. So in order to lighten up this evening's proceeding, Leah is not going to be here tonight.
Oh, okay.
So what happened is, which is the background of the risk assessment, the lethality assessment, is we have long, for a long time, in domestic violence-related matters, understood that certain people present a risk, a predictable risk of committing domestic violence. And in fact, most of you may be aware that in Ulster County, the first county in the state, we rolled out a IPVI program, which is an attempt to reduce domestic violence. That program actually was funded by the state, and it's not a countywide program, which is one of the things that when I went down to New York and talked to about the situation, I said, look, I'd really like to do this in all of Ulster County, but the format was to roll it out with a city police department, so it's the city of Kingston is the IPVI. But even at that time, early on, I talked to the partners that we have in IPVI, and they said, we really want to expand this to the rest of the county. This lethality assessment would fit very nicely in the IPVI program that we're working for in Kingston. And I think it would bring that same protection to the rest of the county. And in general, what happens is that if an officer arrives at a domestic violence scene, they make an assessment of what the needs are and whether the victim is at risk. We do that anyway, but the nature of the program is that there's a follow-up component. The follow-up component provides specific programs in order to help the victim if she needs financial help or housing or whatever it might be to get out of the situation, and also to deal with the person we think is the potential aggressor. So when Leah came to me a couple of years ago, we talked about this. I said, I'm all in favor of it, and you can put my name down as somebody who's supportive. There's a funding available right now in New York State for a number of different programs, being one of them, and Leah came to see me a little while ago and said, I think this is an opportune time for us to get the funding, and would you support me? And I said, yes. In fact, I'll introduce you to the committee. So from that time until like last Friday, I learned that actually that some folks in the county do not support Leah's program only because they want to do it in-house. And in fact, we already have, so there's some things that we duplicated. For instance, the hotline, we have a countywide hotline. She'd be setting up her own hotline. We have the supervising authorities already in place here through probation. And we wouldn't have to have her set another one up. So at some point, I hope to come back to you and say, hey, good news, the county has reached out and gotten some funding for this lethality program, and I'll introduce it to you through the local people, as opposed to Leah's group is a, they're from Dutchess County, they're a private group. And so I think the consensus was if we can do this through Ulster County instead of hiring a private group. We'll save a lot of money on the matching funds part of a grant and things like that. So right now that's still in my, I hope it happens, camp, and it's not happening yet, so I won't take up any more time unless you have questions about it.
Okay, so can I just clarify? So you're essentially saying this is a private program that you support. You would like to
bring it to Ulster County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't have it here yet.
And so without it here yet, you are throwing your support to this program?
Well, just the opposite. Right now I'm withdrawing the support to LEIA.
Okay.
Because the county is going to, within the next 5 weeks, they're going to make an application for funding in order to roll out their own lethality risk program.
Okay,
and provide
the
services here.
Okay.
And it may seem, a simple question you might ask, well, Holly, if you know that what's going on and you can train your officers, why don't you do that now? There's no second part of the program, and that's what you really need. You know, if you're going to make an assessment and you say this person's at risk, we need to have the services available right then, 24/7, in order to get them out of that situation.
Right.
And that's the part, that's really the funding part, that's the hard part to put in play. I think that the law enforcement part, we have people right here in this county that can do the training, but we don't have enough of the counseling component.
Okay.
So that's why it's kind of put on hold. Okay, so, but since I got the floor, hey, there's a couple of things that I just wanted to mention briefly, and most of you I know, and we talk about law enforcement things, and some of you don't, you and I haven't had much contact with them, so.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to introduce myself and say if there's, usually when I come to the legislature, I want something. So I'm here, I don't want anything. I just want to introduce myself and say that my door is open. If you have questions about any of the programs that are coming around, I'd be happy to offer input if that's something you're looking for. And I want to put three things on your radar, so to speak. And they're coming out of Albany. I think that some configuration of all of them is going to happen, and they're going to change what we do. It's not for me to say it's going to be changed for the better or not, but it's for me, I think, to let you know that these changes are going to happen. And they're going to impact the financial component of Ulster County in a pretty big way, I suspect. So the three programs, they're falling into this category of criminal justice reform. And the three components that I am most concerned about are bail, discovery, and speedy trial. And I'm really not here to promote or to oppose any of them. I just wanted to tell you a little bit what the plan is coming out of Albany, and we'll see what happens. And so I understand it. There are a couple of standalone bills, and then there's some of them that are put in the budget. And I'm not good at reading tea leaves anymore, but if I were reading tea leaves, I'd say there's not going to be a lot of people that are going to oppose a budget. Nobody's going to shut down the government after what happened in Albany. I suspect that there are a lot of people that say, if that's what we live with, that's what we live with. So bail. So what they want to do is they want to pass a law that there's no longer any cash bail available for most arrests. And there'll be some exceptions, as in all of these laws, there'll be some exceptions for what you and I think of as the most violent crimes. But they're taking out of the equation things like whether the person has had a failure to appear in the past, a person's criminal history, their residence, things like that. They've put in that one of the plans is to allow, if you have a known, an identifiable person with an identifiable risk, then you can ask for bail. And I think that is really focused on the domestic violence aspect of what we do. So that's a good thing. Well, I told you I was going to editorialize. Okay, so that's one thing that they are considering.
Okay.
But generally speaking, what they're talking about is a no cash bail. And so what I did is I talked to the warden, and I said, well, how many guys do you have up there right now that would fall into this general category where what they want to do is they want to transfer them into a pretrial release type of program, which we have a very strong pretrial release program in Ulster County, which has, I think they supervise around 100 people right now. I talked to Nancy this afternoon about 100 people. There are about 120 people that would fall into the category of pretrial detainees in Ulster County Jail as of last week. And out of that 120, I'd say at least 100, maybe 110, would not, they'd be released, but if this bail reform bill was in place right now, and most of them would be released to Nancy. And she simply doesn't have the resources to deal with that right now. So if you
also facing raise
your,
the age.
Pardon me?
I said we're also facing raise the age, which is going to put an even larger burden on probation.
Well, next year it will, for sure. Next year's
well, after the fall.
Yeah, I agree, after October. So anyway, that's one thing that just on your horizon. If Nancy comes to you and says, I may need money, you can quote me saying she's going to need money.
Okay.
That's one part. The other two parts kind of combine, and that's a discovery package and a speedy trial package. And in each of these packages, there are a lot of things that are overdue that should have been put in place a long time ago, and most of the DA's offices that I know of are already doing them. But they want to legislate it, and in the legislation, they're going to create some problems. The best example I can give you is a case that we have pending right now. So on July 1st last year, there was a fella that was fleeing from a police officer. Coincidentally, he had three prior convictions for fleeing from a police officer, neither here nor there. So he's fleeing from a police officer. He's traveling well over 100 miles an hour, passing people on the right shoulder. Comes to an intersection with a woman who's just dropped off her children at the Boy Scout camp, was going through the intersection, and he lost control of the car and hit her. He was a 3-0 at the time. And he was traveling 110 miles an hour, more or less, at the point of impact, and you can imagine what happened. We have yet to receive what's called an accident reconstruction on that case. If the discovery speedy trial bill was in place today, I would not be able to prosecute that case because I have not been able to turn over the discovery because I don't have the discovery. And so what they've done is they've passed a lot of rules that say that the prosecution must turn over certain pieces of information to the defense in a 15 or 30-day time frame. But what they don't take into account is small counties like us, we are dependent upon services from out of the county. We're largely dependent on state police labs for DNA and serology and things like that. And we won't get some of that information in a timely fashion. And the statute currently written says you can't answer ready for trial until you've turned that over, and if you don't have it, you can't turn it over, and we're going to be very much handcuffed in our ability to prosecute some of those cases. One of the biggest concerns that prosecutors have is the witness intimidation factor. As you all know, domestic violence cases are their own difficulty because victims are so reluctant to come forward. It's a difficult dynamic. Not just domestic violence cases, though. You have a lot of, say, drug cases where people don't want to mention to the drug dealer, by the way, I'm the one that, you know, turned evidence against you. The new rules require us to turn over names and addresses of witnesses in a timely fashion. There's no longer a grand jury secrecy. All grand jury minutes get turned over. You will be able to depose police officers. So just like in a civil deposition, you can call in a police officer and say, sit right down, I have some questions for you. This is all pretrial discovery. There are some things that are going to impact the ability to prosecute cases, and it's going to impact, in my judgment, I guess I am a territorial, it's going to impact people's desire to cooperate with the police. So if any of you have questions or contacts from people in Albany, you might say, do you think all of these things are going to make us safer? That's really what I have as a simple question. And then the speedy trial, one of the things that won't impact us so much, but you look at some of the larger jurisdictions, it's pretty common that people will go through a preliminary process, particularly at the misdemeanor level. So you're arrested for a misdemeanor, you're brought into court, there's a discussion, whether it's a DWI or a petit larceny or whatever it might be, and there's a discussion about resolving a case. And a lot of times there's a plea bargain that takes place, and then people enter a plea and get a discount or whatever it may be, and they leave. The current rules would prohibit any plea bargain before the discovery is done. And so it's going to force, I don't actually even know what's behind that part of the bill, but it's going to really hamper criminal justice as it is right now unless people are going to dump a lot of money into, you know, the things that we cannot possibly provide right now. So I just wanted to bring you all that good news, let you know that that's coming
down.
Thank
you so much.
And what, we and what we hear, though, is that this is happening. It's not, they've been talking about bail reform.
No, it's happening.
And bail reform is long overdue. I mean, you know, the problem is that people drag their heels on some of these issues, and they should have met at the table a long time ago and said, let's get this done in a sensible way. That didn't happen. And so now there's a, okay, we've got all the votes now. We're going to do it the way we want. And some of those, I think some of those suggestions are going to be difficult for counties like Ulster. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got. Questions, comments?
And there's no opportunity, I mean, to negotiate. This is
happening now in Albany. And it's like he had said, some of it will be attached in the governor's budget, which, you know, he likes
Maybe.
To pass an on-time budget. Yeah.
Well, the bail part's in there now.
Yeah, but the legislature's fighting with him about policy in the budget right now.
But nonetheless, yeah, this is an unfortunately, oftentimes it's unintended consequences to things, but these bills have been drafted. They've been drafted for a long time, and now that there's a shift in power in Albany, you're going to see this passing.
And there's no discussion, for example, when you were talking about, you know, speedy trial and discovery and the problems with having to send out to a state lab and it takes forever, has there been any discussion about giving these state labs more resources so that we're not caught in this kind of, is there any discussion about the implementation?
Well, I would hope so, so twice a year the DAs in the state get together. We have a meeting in the winter and we have a meeting this summer, and there's a lot of, you know, woe is me going on, and some of us have said this really is something that doesn't make any sense. We need to talk to our legislators. We have 8 different legislative people in Ulster County, and I wrote to them after the winter meeting. 2 of them got back.
Uh-huh.
I wrote to the governor. You actually can't write to the governor. Yes, you're not allowed to write to the governor, which I said, okay. I thought I'd just send him a note. So anyway, but the DAs are no longer at the table, and for years and years, it really was primarily the Senate that was a little bit more reserved, a little bit more conservative, and they I'm not saying that they really followed what we had to say, but they listened. You know, I'm going to head up to Albany, going to see George. When is it?
Tuesday.
I don't know. In my calendar, and you know, so I'll do what I can. I just want to say, look, there's some things you want to think about, but I don't know that there's really much of an incentive right now in Albany to change what is kind of coming down the pipe.
It's already moved through committees like we have.
It's really an anti-victim bill, and that's the bottom line, is that these bills, I know that what they're thinking about is, you know, all the DAs are bad people and police are bad people and all this kind of thing, and that's all well and good. But it's really they're not taking care of victims. They're putting victims at risk. And I'm shocked. This is another little editorial comment. I'm shocked that, which I wrote to them, they didn't write back either, that the Mothers Against Drunk Driving, I'm stunned that they're not on the courthouse steps saying, are you crazy? You know, if we're going to get another vote from us, because it's a big, strong lobbying group, and not one DWI arrest will fall into the category of bail. I mean, period. It's not.
I thought you said they had priors, though. No?
The prior record has nothing to do with it. And prior absconds. I mean, I can give you silly examples. Like, you know, you have somebody come in and they picked up on a warrant. You bring them in, extradite them. And the judge says, thank you for coming in. Now you make sure you come back.
Have you reached out to someone like Jen Metzger, who just is in the Democratic?
She's part of the
one of the ones that didn't get back to me, but I did reach out to her. I did write her a letter.
Right, Juan, did you want
to? If I could just add to what the district attorney's saying, and he's 100% right, there's a lot of these bills that aren't really looking at the, you know, the effects of what we do in the criminal justice system. I'm actually going up there on Wednesday. The Sheriff's Association has sent something out for us to go up, and we're going to be lobbying after the executive meeting on Wednesday to speak to the legislative side of the House, the Assembly and the Senate, with some of these ideas that don't really really take into effect the victims that are involved mm-hmm. in crime and some of the issues that the district attorney just briefed us on. Mm.
That's helpful. You know, I'm certainly willing to try and reach out to Jen.
Well, I'd love to talk to her. And you know, a lot of it, my judgment, so many people that are involved in this, they don't really understand. It's not that, you know, it's not so much that we agree or disagree. I think there are a lot of things being thrown at them, and it's complex. What we do is complex. And I don't know if they really understand some of the repercussions. You know, why won't you just turn over the lab report? Well, I don't have it. Well, why don't you have it? Because we don't have enough labs. I mean, you know, it's
right.
And if they knew that, maybe that would make a difference. And it's not like we're intentionally holding back information. There are very stringent laws about what we have to turn over. And in Ulster County, we do it anyway. I gather some of the counties that don't.
Well, in the example you just gave in the July 1st, you know, drunk driving case, how long will, for example, do you expect it to take to get the reconstruction report?
Tuesday. But it's been since July. And
right.
That's one of the things, just to segue, one of the things that I've done in a number of different fields is to try and bring services that we can provide directly from DA's office. And one of those is an accident reconstruction team, which we've got the funding from you. Thank you very much.
Right.
And we're involved in getting the training and putting the equipment together. We're going to use the forfeiture sums in order to buy the equipment.
Uh-huh.
And it's examples like this that we will be able to take care of the people here in Ulster County.
And can I just ask you and then I promise I'll go to Laura, in that particular instance, what for you as the district attorney would constitute being speedy, getting the accident, and what time frame would be appropriate and would meet the requirements of due process here?
So we have right now, there are a lot of things in place. It's interesting when you look at some of these statutes, you say, well, you know, we have things in play now. We've been doing it for a long time. I have to be ready for trial within 6 months.
Okay.
But there are examples of things. So I am ready, in that case, I am ready for trial. I'm going to go to trial in a month. If I have the accident reconstruction report, I'll use it. If I don't, I won't.
Mm.
But this statute says that I'm obligated to turn over, and if I don't, then I am by definition not ready for trial, and therefore the case could be dismissed. But there's no need for it. If it says, if you don't turn it over in 6 months, you lose it, okay, I'll live with that. But to take the next step and say, but then you lose the case, that's silly. There's no, I don't know what the incentive is to prevent prosecution of cases. So it's things like that. It's very complicated. The statutes are, you know, people go to law school and stuff to learn this. But I'd love to meet with Jen. I would love to sit down. She's obviously got a head on her shoulders. I'd love to sit down and say, hey, are you aware of some of these things? Because I think that a lot of people want to represent victims. They understand what's at stake. I don't know they really understand the repercussions of some of these bills. And I don't really want to be a lobbyist, but I guess I... Yeah, whatever. Anyway, and you know what? I didn't talk about pot at all. So that is right.
Yeah,
I did well.
That was the last one.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
I mean, I understand there are issues with that as well.
Yes,
marijuana,
there may be.
Testing for marijuana. Yeah, right.
There are a lot.
Are canines that need to be retrained?
Exactly.
A crime. Basically, if there's a fatality, that's my understanding. You always have. Where is the process falling short?
So
secure the area because you can't wait six months to go in.
It's resources. We have local
resources.
Ulster County has amazing resources. We have amazing people that work here in this county. I'm telling you, we're as good as anybody. But there are only. Do you know how many? I think there's three state police.
Reconstructionists.
Yeah. In all of that,
but you have to do it at that time. You can't.
Well, you gather all the information.
It's very expensive.
And then it's very expensive. And I'll give you another example. We have in all of that. F Troop is 3.5 counties, you know, wide. Nowadays, a lot of stuff. What we do is computer stuff. I mean, we when we get access to a phone or to a computer or you know, video cameras and things like that, it's more and more complicated. Rob Klein just retired from the state police, and I came to you guys and said, let me hire him, and you said, yes. I said, thank you. But in all of F Troop, there are only three guys that handle all of those cases. And, you know, they'll tell you there's an eight-month backlog. Well, if you have to put your case in the grand jury in 45 days, 8 months isn't helping. And so these are the kind of things I'm trying to do. I mean, you gave me the permission to get Rob Klein on board. He started on Monday. That's fabulous. You're going to see a big difference there. I'm going to get going on the accident reconstruction. But some of these big bills, they're really, I don't know, they're tough. It's going to be tough for victims. You're going to find a number of people that simply won't cooperate. I mean, you add, I'll be quiet in a minute. So let's just take a guy who sells heroin and fentanyl. Okay, so he sells heroin and fentanyl. Now you can't, there's no bail. So he's out. Okay. Now in 15 days, I've got to turn over the information as to all of my witnesses and their addresses.
Even the confidential ones.
I can make it. The confidential informant is one specific area where I can ask for sealing, but I have to go and do that. But that's fine. So I can keep the confidential informant out, but all the other witnesses become known to him. What do you think he's going to do? Let's not be dramatic, but he could certainly say, you know, it's not healthy for you to be around. I think you need to take a trip somewhere. And we have witness intimidation right now. There's a big picture involved. Anyway, that's what I got. So thank you very much for allowing me to chat. If you have
thank
questions,
you.
I'd really enjoy trying to answer them as best I can.
Thank you for coming. Really appreciate
it.
That was very helpful.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Holly. Mm-hmm.
All right, see you.
So we're gonna try and move through some resolutions, if that's okay, and then I'd like at the end to have Heidi talk about, or Legislator Haynes talk about her trip with the sheriff to Albany, and to kind of report, and maybe the sheriff, I don't know if you're going to stick around, you don't have to, but it would be great if you could.
For the resolutions, and if you have any questions, of course.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Okay, so let's do with resolution number 82. May I have a
motion? I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? This looks like it's for a heating wall.
I can explain it. So years ago, there was only one burnable facility for fire training in Ulster County where you could do live burns, and it was in Walker Valley. And we started funding some of their burn. They're called burn panels. They're essentially concrete panels that go on the walls of a steel structure to absorb the heat and to make sure that the metal doesn't bend and spalled. And you can only use them for so long, for so many hours burning before they're no longer useful. So we've been funding Walker Valley for these for many years. Now Walker Valley is one of two county fire training centers that we're contracting with. So this will continue that funding.
So it's just for a couple of.
I think it's ten. It's 10,000, right?
Yeah. 10,000
to replace aged out panels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any discussion? Thank you for that explanation. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Let's deal with resolution number 95.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Let me just pass this around here. Okay, this is for USERT. Is that the best way to pronounce it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is a countywide emergency response team. Do you have any discussion? It looks like looking through. You've got for hostage situations, barricade situations, sniper situations, high-risk apprehension, high-risk warrant search, personal protection, special assignments.
In layman's terms, it's pretty much the SWAT team.
The SWAT team. Oh, and I also see 8 in active terrorism. All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Pass this around. Resolution number 96, capital body cameras. Motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Any discussion?
this is an amendment to it because we sent it out. It's been ongoing for quite a while. So
yeah.
We finally sent out for an actual requote for all the things we need.
Mm-hmm.
Came in. There's more things that we needed that we didn't know we needed at the time. So it came in a little higher, which is why the amendment to raise it. It's still... at purchasing right now. I just sent all this stuff over last week. They're going to bid it out. Some of the things are on government contracts. Some of the things are not. So as soon as we have the actual cost per item, we'll have the actual, you know, the actual cost per item. Then we'll be submitting that for a bond. There's also a $70,000 Attorney General's grant that will go in with this.
Okay, so the and explain the amendment again for me.
The amendment. Originally, they had budgeted like 175,000 for body cams, and now it's like 300.
Okay, right, because I can recall voting on this. I think we voted on it before. Okay, and so this might be for the cost, but there are potentially incoming subsidization.
There's a 70,000. They pay up to a certain amount per camera, $852 per camera.
Yeah.
And so that when we whatever number that equates to up to 70,000 is what we'll get.
Okay. All in, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Pass this from. Resolution 101, $50,000 for Interact Public Safety Systems.
So move.
Second.
Any discussion?
It's our mobile cop. It's how we talk through.
Okay. Is this something we renew every year?
Yes.
Is this leased equipment?
No.
It's a support, right?
It's a support.
Yeah. It's the company, the technical support for it.
Okay. I'm good.
All right. Any further discussion?
This also, we contract with the local PDs on this, or?
Yes. It's now with the new record, well, actually, Steve probably speaks to it.
Yeah, I don't know about the contract with Interact, but with the new system, yes, everybody is on the same sheet.
So you're speaking to one another, and then also the City of Kingston or wherever
that's
else.
Right. Well, anybody that's on the system.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We'll mix it up with some of the Reverend Julie's system.
Keep us on our toes.
Exactly. Resolution 102. This is for New York Communications Company, $50,000.
Radios.
Radios, lights.
Yeah.
So this cameras. Is...
Nycomco.
Nycomco, but is it for existing equipment, like a renewal of the lease? New, what is this?
No, it's, they program the radios. They make...
Yearly?
Yeah. There's actually a couple of
vehicles you have to put the new radios.
You have to wire everything, and that's
and then there's a service agreement with it that you know they'll come out and
if the radio fix breaks up. They bring a new. I mean,
do we currently lease equipment from Nycomco or do we own it?
We both.
Controversy here, you two.
No, it's all good.
No, moving
second.
We're discussing. We haven't moved yet.
That's my fault. Any other questions? It was my procedurally my fault.
That's okay. Yeah. I'm good.
These guys are giving me a hard time.
I'm sure.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And so now we are at 103. Right. And this is Motorola. $50,000. Motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Any discussion?
Sorry. I'm just trying to get there.
Maintenance agreement for our phones, the 911 phone system.
Oh, 911. Yeah. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
This one you have to go all the way across. It. I haven't got the woman yet. I'll protect you.
Resolution 104, and this is Family of Woodstock, and so do we straighten that out? In other words, are you competing for the, well, you know what, let me move in second first. Okay, so can I have a motion to consider 104?
I'll move it.
Second. Okay, so any questions? My question or concern was that there was some confusion about whether this contract was the same one that District Attorney Conrad just withdrew his support from? In other words, they get getting funding from the same place?
No.
This is alternative to juvenile detention.
Okay. All right. Any discussion? Questions?
I mean, is this...
Wait a second.
It's a new contract, right?
Is this part of the...
Raise the Age?
Okay, so we got to talk about this.
And Nancy was supposed to come? Oh, okay. Yes. Sorry.
From probation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, part of the Raise the Age, we previously had a contract with Family to do the 180 program,
yes,
which they've been doing for 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
Now this is to expand that to include the Raise the Age.
Okay. So it's not necessarily the 180 program, but they're reformatting it to be, to deal with other issues, for Raise the Age?
Well, they're still going to do the 180 program.
Okay,
but
this is in addition to that,
yes,
then.
Yes, we used to do it with the 15 and under, and
yes,
now it's going to include
okay,
the older.
I don't have questions about that. It's the next resolution.
It's
sorry.
The next one.
Thank you.
Any other? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the next one is resolution 105. This is the Center for Creative Education, $50,000. Can I have a motion?
So move.
Second?
Second.
Okay, discussion.
So is this part of the $100,000 that got put into programming for Raise the Age at the Restorative Justice Center?
I don't think so.
It's $75,000 for a Center for Creative Education. Remember back in the fall, I think Hector came and asked for $100,000 in programs. I voted no because I felt that the state may be having funding opportunities for restorative justice, Raise the Age type programs. I don't understand where this $75,000 is coming from. Is that maybe somebody could help me?
Do you know which budget line this is coming out of?
That I do not know. I know this was part of the RFP for the programming.
They did put it out to RFP.
Center, so it was
right, but I think that the RFP would have had to go on out before the budget would have passed to be able to get the contract before us at this point.
Does
so I don't think that this
anywhere?
Would be. I don't
think
that
this is in addition to the $100,000 in programs that we set aside.
Yes.
Wow.
I don't believe because the executive originally wasn't supportive of the $100,000 that we put aside.
Yeah.
Neither was I.
Yeah,
but,
that's what I'm concerned with.
You know, yeah, I don't know
so
for sure without
so
talking to Bert.
Just so that I can understand, so we put out an RFP for programs for the Community Empowerment Center, and then in addition, we put out a request to move $100,000 also for additional programs?
Yeah, I think the argument from Hector was that the programming really wasn't directed at a fuller picture of restorative justice.
Mm-hmm.
It was really directed at Raise the Age, and that
mm-hmm.
if the former county executive was not willing to reconsider, a fuller venue of restorative justice programs beyond just Raise the Age, that the legislature would be able to take that $100,000 and do it themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, pretty much just he wanted restorative justice for older people, not just youth.
Yeah, and there were all sorts of problems
yeah.
with that, like because the Restorative Justice Center can only deal
with younger
on site with below 18, right?
Right.
So but the argument was that you could use the the imprimatur of restorative justice off site and use money that was funneled through restorative justice, but dealt with over 18 at the location. Right now, my understanding was that Mike and Hector had met and they had agreed that the programming would be more robust and that $100,000 was put back in. Is that not the case?
I don't think so.
I believe that Hector came to the legislature and told everybody that he and the county executive were on the same page with it, and I spoke to the county executive the morning of the budget, and he was not.
Well, Hector was worried about missing the adults,
yeah,
the seniors. He was worried about that. So he was determined that this money was going to get put somewhere to be able to handle that when it happened. whereas what we were dealing with at the time was just the Raise the Age. We were preparing to deal with Raise the Age, but Raise the Age in itself did not cover the seniors that were going to get caught up in. Hector was worrying about making sure that we were able to touch those seniors. That's where this $100,000 came from.
But I don't believe that
$100,000.
I don't believe so. That, you know, in the Schedule B, it says the firm shall invoice the county's Department of Probation on a monthly basis. Yeah. In order to invoice probation, we would need to transfer by resolution that money to probation, which hasn't happened, and the executive's office hasn't put in a request for that. So
then it's safe to say this kind of was its own thing, and this is for you.
That $100,000.
I'm as comfortable as I can be without talking to the budget director about it, but I mean, in between now and the legislative meeting, we can talk about it and make sure that this is out of an existing line in probation and not out of the $100,000 of the legislature.
So I'm just looking at the agreement for professional services. It says the county's Department of Probation desires to enter an agreement for youth, arts, wellness, and social justice monitoring, tutoring, and instruction. And that, as you point out, that $100,000 was specifically meant for over 18. So I'm pretty sure that it didn't come from that $100,000 reserve, given that it came from probation.
Nancy and others had come and talked about RFPs that they had out for youth programming, when the budget hearings were going on. And I think that this might be one of them.
If you're not comfortable and you want to find out...
No, I'm good with this. Okay. This was something that was prior to geared towards the youth and not part of that 100.
I think that's right.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. Just need a clarity on that.
And it still has to pass Ways and Means. We can, if it turns out that our assumptions are incorrect, we can always hold it in Ways and Means.
And Jay will check for us as well. So, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Did I sign that before I asked all the questions? I did.
That is the end of the resolution. So what I wanted to just do is turn over to Heidi, and also, Sheriff, if you have anything to add. I don't want to put you on the spot, but Heidi, just tell us what your experience was like in Albany.
Yeah. Last week or the week before, the 21st, we met the sheriff at the Law Enforcement Center, and I believe out of legislators, it was myself and Legislator Nolan, about 11 of us stakeholders from the county took a trip up to Albany County to meet Sheriff Apple, and I believe it was Michael Lyons. He was the superintendent up there to discuss their SHARP program, Sheriff's Heroin Addiction Recovery Program. It's a pre-release pilot program available to sentenced inmates. In order to participate, the inmate must initiate contact and express an interest to the alcoholism and substance abuse counselor of the facility.
Uh-huh.
So it was a great meeting. Thank you so much for organizing it and putting it together. It was a pilot program that I had my eye on for probably the past 3 or 4 years.
Uh-huh.
So we traveled to Albany and they welcomed us with a nice luncheon. So the program involves prison-based treatment and collaboration with community-based treatment centers to provide a post-release treatment strategy.
Okay.
So when they come in, if they pose an interest, they have to be there, they have to be sentenced, number one. So they're there serving some time.
Okay.
And if they pose an interest in participating in this program, they have a separate unit that they can house them in. They're housed in with veterans from a Soldier On program. And they receive, if they opt to, medicated assisted treatment, which could be comprised of Vivitrol or Suboxone, in combination with counseling at the facility. And it helps it helps them get on track, even with a post release. They'll follow them through their release as well.
Mm-hmm.
In addition. Sheriff Apple discussed how he took in three migrants that were picked up from the southern border last summer. The detainees were transferred. They had credible fear interviews, and most of them were processed through Albany County Jail and ultimately sent to Batavia New York, so he actually had a conversation regarding how that program worked through his jail as well.
Uh-huh.
He had success with it, I guess. He got a lot of publicity for it, nonetheless.
And when you say they were released to Batavia...
They were actually pulled out, essentially, slowly, a couple hundred, 50, 100 at a time. He actually provided them with legal and other assistance.
Through Albany Law School.
Yes. So he discussed that as well.
So I'm curious, the pilot program, do they have numbers at this point on the efficacy of the program? I don't know.
So basically, we went up there to see the type of program that they have, to see if we can utilize them here in conjunction with the program that we're going to put together with Coach OD and content and working with the county Vince Martello, who has a plan that he's going to he's been working on for a while. I'm going to kind of jump in with him on that, but we're talking about putting a team together, not just for people that are in that end up in county jail, but those at OD. And if they overdose, we're going to send a team. It's going to be a plainclothes police officer, some from mental health, a peer advocate. And what's interesting about Sheriff's Apple, his program up there, is that he does have a success rate.
Yeah.
What the numbers are, I don't have
right
now, but there is a
helps with recidivism.
He actually used one of his people that were in the program that was successful as one of his peer advocates, and which I found to be pretty amazing. But his numbers are good. The only interesting thing is that because of the success, more people came to the county jail, which is good and bad. If we're the only county jail in this region that does that, then we're going to see an influx of. So that's a concern, and also a concern of having controlled substances in the jail. That's to me a liability, and it also brings concerns. But what I do like about the program is how he combined the veterans that were in his facility, along with the folks that have the opioid issue.
And the veterans weren't serving time. They just
They were serving time.
They were serving time.
It's called Soldier On Program.
Okay.
They had their own separate pod unit, and he approached them and said, "How would you feel if we brought?" Because they wanted to keep them separated. When they want to be strong in recovery, they wanted them surrounded by a group of people that would support that. And they agreed to it.
So the veterans who were serving time, are they also serving time for some sort of drug, or it could be for
could
annual
they?
Range of
not
things.
Necessarily.
I think they suffer from PTSD,
and
they're having issues, coming back into society when they come back from deployments and what.
Okay.
He's using that, and it's actually a pretty good concept, where these veterans are helping these individuals that have this addiction, but they have to want help.
It's voluntary,
this kind of a program happens in a separate pod. Is that going to cause staffing issues for us at the jail if we were to do something in the same vein?
I have not looked at that as far as staffing levels, but I can tell you that if the reason why he put the veterans in with the individuals that have the addiction. Is because they didn't have enough to keep them all in the different pods, and it's a control aspect.
Why? No, absolutely.
The Suboxone, and so if you want to have a controlled pod, and having veterans there is, I think, a good component. I have not looked at the staffing levels on that yet, but I will.
All right.
But it's just getting an entire program in place to include those that actually come into facility.
And I've just got one follow-up on that, and I guess it's for both of you, is the program, it's the only way to say it, privilege-based, poor behavior would disqualify you from
the
program?
Absolutely, they would have to have, first of all, you want to get help.
Right.
And if you can get help,
you have to
adhere to the rules of the facility. And
See, he follows them after, even.
Yes. This is
actually, he works with ACCA, Albany Care Center, so as post-release. So they'll follow them through the release also, so especially if they're going to be on the Vivitrol, that's a once-a-month injection.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, and on the outside, they'll even use different types of programs to help with reentry and you know, because at the end of the day, you know, you want a trained and skilled workforce, but you want productive, you know, productivity and reintegration back into society. So that's a lot of what I liked about his program, too. But you have to be able to have a facility to also...
And they also have a lot more money up in Albany County.
Yeah, they have a lot.
In Ulster County. So, you know, that's a concern. You know, they can...
That always
is
a concern.
People can apply for Medicaid a little bit more easier there than they can here.
Yeah, because that's also a part of it. You know, if they don't have private insurance, they will put them on an insurance plan, typically Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
So they have to become insured, while, you know. And you guys do that also already.
It used to be if you were in jail, you couldn't get it.
Oh, now you can.
They changed it several years ago.
Yes, they changed it because of the Affordable Care Act.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, but is there a possibility of doing the program without Suboxone and Vivitrol?
You know, each person has their own individual way of...
But I mean, for you doing the whole program...
Well, I would have to be inclusive, because if somebody comes in, let's say, for example, somebody's on Suboxone, and they come in, the purpose of that program is to continue that treatment. If you stop it, and you put them, let's say, on Vivitrol, what's been happening is these people get out, and they either die of an overdose, or they go back. And so his idea was continue... The program that they were on. But we're offering them Vivitrol. So one of the things we're looking at here at the Ulster County Jail is a more vigorous Vivitrol program, where it's not one but two injections. And
a month?
The company, it's one when you first get in.
Then the one when
and
you
then
leave.
One,
aren't
you know,
they like $700 a dose, though?
They are, but the company's willing to give it for free as a pilot program.
Of course they are.
But there is something. Some people are saying, first of all, the injectors are very, very painful. And some people are saying that it's not as good as going to, like, say, Suboxone or Methadone. Right now we had three pregnant females that
were
on Methadone. We actually take them to the clinic.
Oh, wow.
And then bring them back.
Wow.
So
you don't even administer Methadone in your jail? No,
we have not, but at some point we're going to start looking
but
at
you
that.
Have to
but
be,
we have not.
You have to be like certified or something to do.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're
like there's certain
we're just, as
you
know,
places
we're just,
you can
exactly.
do it.
Exactly. We're getting a new contract. We have a new medical provider that's coming in.
Yeah.
So that's going to be part of the whole process along with this program that we're looking to put in. Mm-hmm. But I do have reservations, and the reservations are obviously having a controlled substance in the jail.
Uh-huh.
God forbid it gets into the wrong hands, but they're... Supposedly it's liquid or it's injected. There's no way that, and they'll check their mouths and they'll be in the medical facility part of the jail
to administer it. They administer the Suboxone in a separate unit. Say, I think he was using the gym, he said, or something.
Right.
They'd line up because I don't know if you're aware, but Suboxone is a contraband in the jail.
Mm-hmm.
It's smuggled in a lot. If you don't have any opiates in your system,
mm-hmm.
and you take Suboxone, you're going to get high. Mm-hmm. So that you know.
We had a couple of COs get arrested a couple of years ago for smuggling Suboxone.
Yeah, same with methadone too. If you don't have, if you're not on methadone,
you can mail it in. It's so thin. I mean,
yeah, it's
it
like a Listerine thin strip. You know, what they're like.
Yeah.
Those little dissolves.
Yeah.
So they'll Suboxone, put them in the back of stamps and put them in cigarette.
You can do a whole host of things.
You can, yeah. So, but you know, he's very respectful of the fact that everyone's path to recovery is different. Whether you believe in MATs, medicated assisted treatment programs, or you believe in he would combine it with a strong 12-step program as well.
Okay.
Well, I mean, one of the biggest issues we have, you know, with recovery in Ulster County is the lack of supportive housing.
Transitional
supportive housing.
Especially,
yeah.
We have a huge lack in transitional housing.
And everybody wants it, but nobody wants it in their town. Nobody wants it in their village.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, nobody wants it. And that's a major component to this. I mean, I've sent people to ACCA.
Uh-huh.
Because they do not have the transitional housing here. They have some, but oftentimes people don't achieve recovery on their first time around. So you're talking like five times around,
right.
You know, those types of the facilities aren't working for them. But like I said, you'd use it in conjunction with other counseling programs,
absolutely.
A strong 12-step
absolutely.
Or
What other?
And the purpose is to get them off and not get them off the drugs and not get them back.
Right.
Or at least a program where they can go out and get a job and not end up back in the county jail.
Right. And but it sounds like it's the cost of transitional housing is
yeah
is
we lack transitional important. Housing in Ulster County.
Yeah, it's not even the cost; it's the availability.
We don't have it. We lack that.
And and so knowing that that's not, we don't have that component to the program, does that concern you in terms of potential efficacy?
It does. But I think at some point, I think we will get a program here. There's okay. some people that are like these...
Samadhi.
Samadhi, exactly. They just opened up.
Yeah, they offer some different things, but the actual housing, like, you know, I mean, just personally speaking, I'd love a recovery village. That's just,
yeah.
You know,
I've heard other
where
people,
they transition yeah. into that yeah. and they learn that work ethic and what it's like to work hard and, you know, that, but, you know, until we have that, we have to make do with what we have. So, you know, it's been we've been discussing this for quite a few years here between UCAN and here in the legislature, and I know on a state level as well, you know, we do all we can. The governor sends down, OASIS sends down monies, and they expand a few beds here and a few things there, you know. But, you know, this is...
Nothing systematic.
We have to think outside the box and try different things to see if it's working up in Albany.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it is. Uh-huh. I don't have the specifics, but I know he said it was like a 40%, you know, he stopped. He's like 40% of them didn't come back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good, and we can duplicate that here. But we're a lot smaller. We're not Albany County, and
it sounds like we're going to have some modifications. We don't have the resources. We're smaller.
But I think if we do start the program, we're going to learn as we go and adjust accordingly.
Okay.
And that's what we have to do. See what works, what's cost effective, and you start looking at the numbers if this is working or not. I think trying something is the important thing, getting something done. But get past the talking phase and actually putting something concrete and doing something is what I'm looking for.
And we're continuing to see increased numbers of addiction. It's not going down or leveling off. It's still on the upswing.
Right.
Well, it was just Richard Jarrett. I don't know if everyone got to look at it, but Richard Jarrettine had sent something to Vicky, asked from Mike Juby, who runs the Headless Horseman. It was a New York Post article about the transportation pipeline, essentially, of fentanyl and heroin from, you know, south of the border, and Kingston is listed on the, you know, to trafficking zone. So
I got a lot of phone calls on that.
I bet.
and to that, with that being said, a few years ago, initially when the federal government was, you know, funding for high-intensity drug trafficking areas, Ulster was not on that list, and I believe it was Schumer that got us on that list, you know, because I do believe that this epidemic is also a federal issue, and it deserves a federal response as well. So if there's any fundings that are available that's going to help combat this epidemic, I think that we need to make sure that we pursue those as well, because this is a...
Just to add on that, we had zero grant writers at the sheriff's office. We're looking to get three of them trained. Orange County's got six.
Wow.
And it's about knowing what's out there.
Where the monies are.
For it. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely going to start looking at that, figuring out a way to get that. But then, and if I may, speak about staffing levels. The Commission on Corrections controls the staffing levels at the jail.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
But if we, I think they haven't been here since 2013, and we're going to probably have them come down. And that, it's two things about that. Sometimes I'll look at it and says, okay, you need an adjustment on your staffing levels. Or they could say, you got too many people.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really got to look at the difference.
Wait until after we lose the juvenile pod.
So we have to look at how we do things. On the other side of that, the staffing levels at the road patrol side, the deputy side of the house, the criminal side of the house, you know, it hasn't been changed in 18 years is what I'm being told.
Wow.
And so the population of the county has grown since.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to look, especially if you want to set up these teams that go out and work with those medical professionals, with those peer advocates to go out and find these overdose individuals. And there is a side of that that I've helped. I've gotten more information from people when I help them rather than arresting them. If we get these overdose people, they're going to say to us and their families, out on the trail, the family members are saying, I was taking my family members to go get the drugs because I didn't want them to suffer. So people know where this stuff is being sold at. And that is an angle that law enforcement has to look at when we help people. And we're going to say, look, do you want somebody to suffer what you're going through? No. Then tell us where the stuff is at so we can get it off the streets. So that's also part of this whole
picture. Multi-pronged approach to the whole thing, definitely.
Absolutely. And staffing levels have to be looked at.
I mean, I can't say enough of, you know, absolutely, I appreciate everything that you've said, and you're right, you know, we have to try something. Just talking about it and pointing out the problems aren't, you know, obviously solving the problem. So, you know, at least trying something, even if you can make a little bit of progress here, a little bit of progress there, that's, you know, small changes add up to big change. So, thanks for all your work.
We all know it all comes down to one thing, how much money.
That's
always an issue.
Well, you're going to pay it on the front end, or you're going to pay it on the back end? And it's more expensive to pay on the back end.
Well, that's what I was thinking in terms of the shots, right? You're saying it's $700 for a shot of the trauma.
Yeah, but Suboxone, they get a script every 2 weeks. They're on that perpetually. There's no jump-off point to Suboxone. It's like a diabetic once they go on insulin. There's no jump-off point for Suboxone.
So you're on that for the rest of your
life?
Taking
one addiction to another.
Yes, it is. That is absolutely what it is. So every 2 weeks, they'll be going and get their script for Suboxone.
And how much is Suboxone?
Couldn't tell you.
It's cheap.
I don't know about that.
But Vivitrol, you take it just
once a month.
Stop.
For
there's no detox off. There's no withdrawal from the Vivitrol. Sorry, Sheriff.
Okay.
There's no withdrawal from the Vivitrol. The withdrawal from the Suboxone is more severe than that of detox from heroin.
That is 100% right.
And not only that, but you could still be on Suboxone and be on Xanax or any benzodiazepines and get high. So, and you can die from the withdrawal from benzos. So you could be on Suboxone and you're not going to really want heroin, but you can be on a benzo and still die from the detox of it. You can't die from a detox of heroin, though. Alcohol and benzos, you can.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yes, if you have to outweigh. There are a lot of people who refuse Suboxone because they know, word on the street, you can't get off of the Suboxone.
Yeah.
It's very, it's not that you can't. It's very, very difficult.
Hard.
We all know people. We know people who've come to UCAN and shared their experiences. Danny Savona is one.
Yeah.
If you want to know about Suboxone, go talk to Danny. He's very,
the age
very
we're talking about here. We're talking 20 to 30.
Yeah.
And a lot of their brains aren't fully developed either.
No.
And yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we add this to our our resolution, so if people wanted to take a look at some of this information, they could click on?
Sure.
Yeah. She's looking at me like, what are you
talking about? Keeping her fingers working.
And it'll be in the minutes.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. Thank you very much, Sheriff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate that. There were folks in the county legislature, district attorney's office,
Department of
Health, and some of our faith-based leaders were also there.
Yeah.
So it was a good trip.
Yeah, it really was. It was a great trip. Thank you so much. Well, most of
and everybody had different opinions, which is great.
Can I ask about District Attorney Carnwright's end presentation, where he's talking about, you know, speedy trial, discovery, all that stuff. I have a quick question about whether you have been able to reach out to any of our, you know, newly elected state
senators.
Well,
that's the reason I'm heading up to Albany on Wednesday.
All right.
And so there's an executive meeting with basically they put out an email saying, you know, they're going to be meeting. There's a legislative session.
Yeah.
There's some important topics. If you're near Albany, we need you to come up here for the executive session, and then we're going to go and talk to the assembly and their state senators.
Yeah.
To see if we can get them to, you know, to look and think about what they're going to do before they make.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that, you know, cash bail, criminalizing poverty, that kind of thing can be really problematic, but there seems that there are some unintended consequences here that are equally problematic.
Right.
So, and I know, you know, we just had an election and a campaign, and you must have campaigned with Jen, so I can't imagine that you wouldn't be able to get a hold of her and have a conversation.
I think it's a question of two people who commit the same crime. Somebody has money,
yeah,
and get out, and the other person doesn't. That's not, I mean, reform needs to come to that. I mean,
right,
that's basic, but we can't forget about domestic violence,
sure,
and
right,
the crimes of passion,
and the victims.
And most importantly, the victims. And so when they throw a blanket statement about no bail and they have specific crimes, everybody's like, wait a minute.
Right.
You know, somebody said that you pull somebody over and they, all of a sudden they resist arrest and you get hit. I mean, there's no bail. I mean, you just write them a appearance ticket and they're on their way. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
This
yeah
is like a domestic dispute. I mean, you know, somebody
right
gets into a fight with their loved one, and there's this passion there, and you're just going to give them an appearance ticket. That's,
and then they go back home.
Be right back there.
Go back to the
site.
Well,
right, right.
And what the DA brought up about, you know, DWIs. I mean, if you, you know, an officer pulls over somebody who's got who blows a 3.5, you know, you give them an appearance ticket, they're likely to go out and blow a 3.5 tomorrow. I mean, someone who's driving with a 3.5, that's, you know, that's emblematic of a long-term problem that is... Exactly. There was an Orange County court judge many years ago, before I was in the legislature. Person had their, like, 40-something DWI, and the judge sentenced them to life in prison because,
mm-hmm,
you know, it was obvious that, I mean, at their 40-something DWI, they
right
still hadn't killed anybody.
Right.
And it's a miracle that they hadn't killed anybody.
Right.
You know, but that's, you know, that's an issue for, I mean, you know, some of these, when you think nonviolent crimes, you think, you know, you know, stealing a candy bar or something
right
like that. You're not thinking of somebody who's out on the road who commits felony DWI.
Yeah.
And just by happenstance, thank God, didn't kill anybody.
Right, right.
Well, the only good thing I would say is that they immediately wanted to make the jail reform right away. Now they're kind of...
Yeah.
They're thinking about it.
Thinking about it.
Well, I mean, I wonder, just, it might be interesting to see if we could get maybe the public defender to come in and give his perspective, because I wonder if he, there might be some insight from him that is a little bit different from...
You mean Brian Brown?
Oh, well, no, not I think it's Kossover.
Andy Kossover.
Oh,
right.
Brian Rounds is a
defense
attorney.
But I mean,
I'm
future
sorry
county court
judge. It
might be interesting. He might have,
yeah,
he might have, you know, on balance, he might say that this is good.
Yeah.
But I would agree, this is not. And it might be interesting to see if there's a convergence of thought where something's not
yeah
good.
But it is
honestly,
you say about timelines and
yeah
speedy trials. I mean,
yeah,
it's true. The lab, you're talking about the state police lab.
Yeah.
They're inundated with all the different agencies in the whole state.
Right.
And if the turnaround is 15 days and you don't get it in time, the case gets dismissed. That's a huge issue.
Right.
One of the things in Albany that causes a lot of these unintended consequences is that, you know, both houses of the state legislature are now predominantly governed by majorities that are almost all from New York City.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't suffer from some of the rural county problems that we have up there. The NYPD has their own crime labs. They have
right
their own,
right,
you know, they have everything there to do the job for themselves when
right
upstate counties have to rely on outside agencies.
Right.
And
right
and with that being said, more than anything, I think, you know, us as the committee or even as a body, we most, you know, need to be concerned with how it's affecting our county.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because, you know, clearly, you know, like he just said, we're not the east side.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that if you're going to demand, you know, discovery within a certain period of time, then you've got to properly fund the
yeah
the departments that
yeah
are responsible
oh
for
yeah
handing
but
the discovery back to you, you know. So, so I mean, I can understand why you don't want something lingering for,
yep,
you know, you begin to forget details, a whole range of things occur, but it seems to me that if you're going to make that kind of demand, which might be appropriate under due process, whatever, you got to properly fund. But it would be interesting, and if the sheriff were here too, because hopefully you'll be here to for some other reason, and we could have Andy come in and speak to these three issues too. That would be
yeah
really cool, just to get a different perspective, and we could ask him
absolutely
some of the critical questions that District Attorney Cartwright. So,
agreed. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, that would be a nice exchange.
Before we sit, they already they've already decided, but somewhere, some kind of coalition that has looked at certain points, maybe there's groups that are looking at one part.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we need to get before them, to pound that before they've ironed it out, all the this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, we're concerned about one part. There are somebody else. We need some kind of way put together that group, that coalition that has looked at the whole thing that they're trying to do, so that we can go, and when you talk about lobbying, when you talk about whatever we need to do, go with a strength as to why this one is weak,
mm-hmm.
or this one is strong on this point, and a body with along with us is lobbying another part, because we can't, it's very hard for us to sit with a few people we have and study the whole thing.
Right, mm-hmm. right, sure.
So, but I'm sure that there are other bodies within this county that are worried, that are looking. Or either that, or we form co-committees or whatever, where one is looking at one part, another is looking at another part, so that we can, and we don't have a whole bunch of time to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that we might think about is
I think again, as we say, New York City is strong. By the time it's over, from my time in New York, they kind of get what they want.
Yeah.
Okay. They already have more than the rest, but they're willing. They can take from the rest just about any time they get ready, it seems. But the rest have to be able to stand up and say, okay, this is exactly how it's going to affect us.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going to happen. And just like we've done with water and we've done with so many other things, we need to be able to stand up and let them know this effect is going to destroy what right now is an up-and-coming strong part of this state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What are we going to do? So that it's not something that we sit back and wait until they've done it, which, again, we may be late. But it's something that we need to address it to a point to where they realize that this is a real problem.
I mean, the problem is that it is complex, right? So you, when you weigh in on this, you want to make sure that you're weighing in such a way that recognizes the ways in which the process had been potentially abused and the ways in which these new reforms have unintended consequences well, that you're not in favor of. So it gets, and I'm thinking maybe, I mean, we might be too late to do this. I mean, I think, for me anyway, it's always helpful when you hear both sides,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so hearing the public defender side will help me figure out where I think the middle ground is, right?
Well, we can always hold a special meeting, you know, and invite Andy to come and give us his opinion on it.
We could do that. And, the thing I was thinking is that in the end, if we hear and there's a consensus or agreement about what we find problematic about the potential reforms, then maybe we collectively as a committee could write a letter
mm-hmm.
to our state representatives and say, look, here's what we find problematic, and to lay it out in really clear terms. The problem is we might be late.
You need to do that by June.
Right.
Yeah.
But
again, if we could find time this month, then we'll have to talk to Vicky about it. If we could find time this month for a short meeting, we'll have Andy
come in.
Then we've heard from the sheriff, we've heard from the district attorney, we've heard from the public defender,
right.
And then we might have at least enough information amongst ourselves to be able to write that letter prior to the budget.
Yeah. Okay. So can we try to get him in and find a time to have a special meeting and then have his side, and then after he speaks and maybe the sheriff can come in as well to kind of say, well, I disagree with that, or just to have a kind of conversation about it.
And I'm sure Holly would come back and have it, and we could have a collective discussion on it.
Yeah, that would be great, because then we'd kind of get all sides, and then maybe after that is concluded, we can just spend, a little bit of time trying to figure out if there's some kind of consensus and if there's something we want to send to our representatives and senators.
Jay brought up an important thing, too. Also, Nancy Schmidt at probation, because probation is going to have a lot to do with this stuff as well.
Okay, that sounds great. Jay's like, thanks a lot.
Well, that was, we're on a county level. Holly was concerned that it was going to be impacted on probation.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that we found middle ground at the Service Association.
You did. Okay.
Agrees with yes, one way or the other. It's a very, I guess I could say, very conservative group. And there are those of us that aren't that conservative. We're in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And so some of the topics that the DA brought up are some of those middle of the road topics.
Right.
Look, the law enforcement in general, right, public safety.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just even just to the bail reform issue, you know, I think that almost everybody can agree that there needs to be some sort of bail reform.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you know, one way, and I brought this up to the sheriff at one point, that it was Mr. Cajun brought an issue to this committee several years ago about parole violators sitting in our county jail. So parole violator, you're going back to state prison.
Uh-huh.
We had a higher number of parole violators in our county jail than surrounding counties.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were there longer.
Longer, exactly. Uh-huh. And you know, the sheriff was here, Sheriff Van Blarkum, and he said, I'll look into it.
Mm-hmm.
So he came back the next month and said that there, Judge Ball in the city court was setting, like, ridiculously low bails on the underlying charge, whether it's jaywalking or whatever they got violated for parole violation.
Uh-huh.
And so they were sitting in county jail on $50 bail or $100 bail rather than going back to state prison, where they would go if they were just ROR'd on the lower charge.
Okay.
And Sheriff Van Blarkum went down to city court and bailed out a number of them on his credit card, and they all went back to state prison.
Huh.
That was when we were having a lot of board-ins from Dutchess County,
uh-huh,
and every bed that was taken up by a parole violator was costing us $100 a day or $115 a day that we were getting from Dutchess County boarding in their inmates. So,
uh-huh.
So that kind, I mean, that's the kind of bail reform that's just common sense.
Uh-huh.
You know, these ridiculously low bails that, you know, are unnecessary to, you know, trying to get somebody to return to court.
Okay.
So
I mean, the sort of abuses that I think are most reported on are those who can't afford to pay, for example, a ticket, and end up finding themselves in prison. Right, it's like for a routine stop, they're unable to pay, they don't pay and continue, and then there's a point in time in which they either pay or they end up going to jail.
A ticket?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to this one guy who had a series of tickets, driving violations, and he was unable to pay. He was unable to pay the ticket, and he wasn't working at the time, and he basically just said, I'll serve my time, and that, you know, I'll be done.
It's an aggravated unlicensed operation. It could be a misdemeanor.
Right.
Because they have multiple traffic tickets that have been able to go over, so they never paid, so they get.
But once you,
right.
But that's only after you've driven, after having your license suspended, right?
Yeah.
Right. But it's generative of initially not being able to pay the ticket because you don't have enough money, right? And so maybe those might be more problematic than you know somebody who we're dealing with a domestic violence issue or something along those lines. So I think when people talk about criminalizing poverty, those are the sorts of instances that they're talking about, and those are sort of the instances where they're looking for some kind of reform. It seems like the penalty would be disproportionate. How many people we're talking about? I don't know. I mean, do you have any sense of how many people are in that? No, yeah, exactly. So that would be kind of important to know.
I think Holly, what was he saying? It was 102 or something like that, or in county jail that would have been.
Domestic violence.
Yeah.
No, 100. That could be let go.
Right. That would be let go based on the cash bail,
right,
elimination of cash bail.
Right. Right.
But most of them will be back because they did break the law.
And okay.
Eventually.
Right.
Once they're
sentenced,
they show
up, then they get sent somewhere. You know, a lot of people sit in jail knowing that when it goes, they'll do time served.
Is it
possible? Bail is basically, I mean, the reason why people put bail is put in place is because people want coming back to take care of their charges.
Right.
Right.
And so this has already happened in New Jersey. And initially, the jails are empty, but there are some counties that are saying that the warrant levels are, bench warrant levels are
increased, right.
So now you need a warrant squad to find all these people.
Right.
Can I just, Sheriff, is it possible by next month or the month after to give us a report on how many, on the population of the jail based on, you know, sentenced or, you know,
sure.
or pretrial?
Sure.
This is something great I'm curious about, you know, because anybody who gets sentenced to, is it anybody sentenced to less than a year goes to county on misdemeanor, you know, like pretty much misdemeanor charges?
Right, but sometimes you can have people there for like over a year.
15 months.
Waiting trial or, you know, waiting sentencing. We had one guy that was awaiting sentencing for a very long time in the medical unit because he was medically unable to be sentenced. We ended up buying him a heart. And then he got sent to state prison. He killed his wife.
You know, you can do a year.
It's a lot deeper than...
Right.
You know, I know.
If there's two charges, right?
Domestic violence is a lot deeper than we give it credit for.
Yeah.
You know,
the idea of addressing the problem and knowing when to get into it and when to leave it alone.
That's one of the things that really
becomes the issue.
The domestic violence bail issue is, I think, really problematic.
But I think with all of it, a good understanding of what it is they think they're trying to do,
mm-hmm.
and how that really affects us.
Because mm-hmm.
I can't go fight for New York City, but I can sure go argue a good thing for Ulster County.
Yep.
If we understand how it's affecting us negatively or positively, then
mm-hmm.
we can go and put up a good fight. But if I'm going arguing against New York City, not knowing how it's really costing us or who it's really costing, then I go weak in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to understand what kind of money it's going to cost us, what kind of personnel it's going to cost us, how it's going to affect our citizens. When we understand all of that, then we can make a good attack, more so to speak.
Yep.
So we're talking Carnwright, Kossover, county sheriff, probation. Anybody else you think might be good to have at the table?
A judge.
Are we allowed to do that?
No.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the judges are going
to
come. Possibly, I would say maybe budget director or the finance director.
Judge. Okay.
Retired judge.
Or deputy county executive if Mr. Ryder wants to come in his stead.
Okay, that sounds good. That's great. All right.
Thank you. Great meeting.
Yeah, it's an awesome meeting.
Oh, good. I'm glad you guys said that. So we'll see each other again sometime this month.
Unless there's anything else, then will we adjourn?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you very much, Sheriff.
How much longer after you missed a great meeting?